Hi, I'm Dr. Amy French, Assistant Professor of History at Delta College. Today's Moment in Time is the first part of a two-part series on the 1967 riots, focusing on Detroit. The civil rights movement had been underway for two decades when, in June of 1967, tensions rose in numerous cities such as Tampa, Cincinnati, Atlanta, and Newark. Before the year would end, 164 civil disturbances would be reported. Many of these were marked by violence. One of the most devastating riots occurred in Detroit. To quote the conclusions of the Kerner Commission, racism was essentially responsible for the explosive mixture that accumulated in American cities that summer. Tensions were high before the Detroit riot started. A Black Army veteran, Danny Thomas, had been killed by a gang of white youths. Many Detroiters questioned why only one member of the gang had been arrested, and the media had been quite quiet on the matter. It seemed to some that the newspaper had played down conflict when it occurred against African Americans, but that conflict by African Americans was given plenty of press. There was also a long history of conflict between the police department and Detroiters. In the 12th Street neighborhood where the riot broke out, the issue of police brutality was a recurring complaint. The riot started during the early hours of July 23rd, when Detroit police raided an illegal after-hours bar, where a party was being held for Vietnam servicemen. As the arrests were being completed, a crowd of about 200 gathered. According to the Kerner Commission, a few minutes after 5 a.m., just after the last of those arrested had been taken away, an empty bottle smashed into the rear window of a police car and a trash basket was thrown through the window of a store. Melee must have escalated quickly because the mayor, Jerome Kavanaugh, was notified at 5:20 a.m. Looters started attacking stores while vandals started fires. By 7:50 a.m., the commission reported that an estimated 3,000 people were on 12th Street. The police erected roadblocks, but they did little to stop the rioters. By mid-morning, 1,122 police officers were on duty and the riot was showing no signs of abatement. By mid-afternoon, Detroit police had called for backup and 360 more officers assembled at the armory. The 12th Street area had already been overcrowded with a density of people double the city average. White departure from the area had made a formerly integrated neighborhood almost entirely one race. According to the commission, 25% of the housing was substandard and 19% had major deficiencies. The crime rate was double that of the rest of the city. According to a 1966 survey cited by the commission, 93% of 12th Streeters reported wanting out of the area, and 78% believed that the police did not respond promptly when summoned for help. Poor street lighting and garbage collection, as well as racial disparity in income, underrepresentation of African Americans in elected positions, overcrowded schools, all contributed to the racial inequality that fueled the flames of the riot. When Governor George Romney flew over the area, he told the commission that it looked like the city had been bombed on the west side and there was an area 2.5 miles by 3.5 miles with major fires. A 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. curfew was instated, and thousands of more troops were brought in from the National Guard. As injuries increased, President Johnson signed a proclamation federalizing the Michigan Guard and authorizing the use of paratroopers. Tanks rolled down the streets of Detroit. After 4 days of rioting, orders started to return to the city. 43 lay dead, over 1,100 were injured, and over 7,200 arrested. Stay tuned next week when I discuss why these riots occurred. I'm Dr. Amy French, and This Moment in Time is a production of Delta College Broadcasting in collaboration with Delta's History Department. Panic in Detroit.